Thanks, Ben, for inviting me here. So as Ben said, I'm a final year PhD student in the Biomedical Image Analysis group at Imperial College London. And I'm going to talk about learning techniques from graph structured neuroimaging data. So during the course of my PhD, I've been mostly interested in looking at the brain from a network perspective. And why that is interesting is, first of all, because cognition is a network phenomenon, but apart from that, there are certain disorders, neurological or neuropsychiatric, for which there is no physical trace, but only changes in the wiring and the strength of the connections. And one of the first questions I was interested in is looking at two brain graphs representing structural or functional connectivity. How similar are they? But first of all, in order to get a network representation of the brain, it needs to be split into a set of regions using a brain parcellation method, which is equivalent to a clustering problem. And then a signal is acquired for each of these regions, either with diffusion imaging when we're looking at the structural connections between brain areas, or with electrophysiological recordings like fMRI, EEG, or MEG, which yield time series data. And then from the structural connections or the correlations between this time series data, we can obtain adjacency matrices that represent the structural or functional brain networks respectively, and get a network representation upon which traditional network analysis methods can be performed. So in order to perform any kind of inference on these brain graphs, after constructing the graph, one traditional approach is to embed the graphs into feature vectors, like in this case, and then each feature vector is associated with a specific class, which can be either a disease status or a healthy status. And then any traditional machine learning method can be performed to solve this classification or regression problem. So there's different kinds of approaches to deal with this problem of comparing graphs and evaluating their similarity or dissimilarity. Graph kernels are one group of methods that are developed to solve this kind of problems. But one issue with graph kernels is the fact that they cannot be tailored for a specific application. So in 2015, when this CVPR paper was published, the authors proposed a method to learn to compare image batches. So we've been wondering whether we could employ something like this in order to learn to compare graphs, and more specifically, brain connectivity graphs. For those of you that are not familiar with traditional convolutional neural networks, there is a set of building blocks, like the convolutional layers, which basically learn filters at different resolutions and levels, and they yield hierarchical representations of the image features. And the nonlinear activations are essentially adding expressivity to the network by learning nonlinear mappings from the input to the output. And the output signal, if we're dealing with an image classification task, is basically telling us which of the present classes the current sample corresponds to, or what the prediction for this specific sample. So if these convolutional neural networks have been well defined and used in several different applications in the Euclidean domain, so 2D or 3D images, like that are defined on a regular grid, but their generalization to an irregular domain is not straightforward. And in the medical imaging field, there's several occasions where we have to deal with irregular graphs, like, for example, superpixels, meshes, or brain networks. And to better understand the analogies between the Euclidean and the irregular domain, in the Euclidean domain, we have the domain structure, which is the regular pixel or voxel grid, and the equivalent for that is the graph structure. And then we always have a fixed number of neighbors and a specific node ordering, which is not the case in the irregular domain. So in the Euclidean domain, there's an intrinsic node ordering, so we always know which pixel is top left, and we always know how many neighbors each pixel has. In terms of the node signal that is observed in each case, in the Euclidean domain, we have the image intensities. In the irregular domain, we have a feature vector representation that is associated with each different node. And in terms of tasks that we're trying to solve, the image classification problem that I talked about earlier is equivalent to a graph classification problem. So, for example, in the brain connectivity context, it might be whether a certain graph corresponds to a healthy or a diseased individual, whereas an image segmentation task is equivalent to classifying nodes within this graph. A very important aspect to generalize from Euclidean to irregular domains is the graph Fourier transform, which is the equivalent of the Fourier transform in the Euclidean domain, which probably most of you are familiar with. And that involves the expansion of a signal in terms of a set of eigenfunctions, and these eigenfunctions, these are the eigenfunctions of the Laplace operator, which is a core operator in spectral analysis. The graph signal in this example is the blue lines here. So these are the nodes, the dashed red lines correspond to the graph structure, and the blue lines are the observed signal on each of the nodes, and in this case, all nodes have a positive signal. The eigen decomposition of the Laplacian matrix that corresponds to this graph structure yields a set of graph frequencies and an orthonormal basis. So for the increasing values of with increasing eigenvalues, we're looking at more sharp transitions in the signal on the observed on the graph. And just to give you a bit of intuition behind this, on the top you can see the standard Fourier basis. So the blue line is the lowest frequency component, which corresponds to the first eigenvector in the in the graph domain. And then as you move to the right, you see the highest frequency, the eigenvectors corresponding to the highest frequencies. So in order to perform graph convolutions, they can easily be performed in the Fourier domain as multiplications. But this would require then defining the filters on the eigenvalues from this eigendecomposition is a highly computationally expensive process. And it yields filters that are not strictly localized, which is a property that is essential for graph convolutional networks in the Euclidean domain, at least. So quite recently, the polynomial parameterization of the filters has been proposed. And the main advantage of these polynomial parameterizations is that they have lower computational complexity, and they yield filters that are strictly k-localized, where k is the order of the polynomial. Using this methodology, we propose this framework where first, we obtain a labeled graph representation from the raw fMRI time series with the process I described in my first slide. And then a pair of graphs for two different individuals is fed into a Siamese graph convolutional network that employs the spectral graph convolutions. And then after filtering the signal on the nodes on each of these pathways, the two are merged with a dot product layer that basically on each node has a similarity between the feature vectors of the two graphs. And then a fully connected layer is used to merge the signal from all the nodes and then give us the final similarity estimate. In this context, we looked at the impact of the different loss functions. First, we use the hinge loss, which is a kind of standard maximum margin loss used in this kind of problems. Then we used the global loss function, which is trying to aiming to maximize the margin between the means of the distributions for matching versus non-matching graph similarities. And then the constraint variance loss, which is a modification of this loss to prevent similarities to collapse around the means of these two distributions. And one challenging aspect of the data sets that we used to evaluate the method, which was the ABI data set, and this aggregates data from 20 different acquisition sites with different imaging protocols. So we had to make sure in this multi-site setup that all sites are observed in both training and testing phase. And then we had to carefully build our pairs that we feed in the network in a manner that the network is not biased towards a specific site or individual. We evaluated the method on different tasks. One of the tasks here evaluated on UK Biobank, so 2,500 subjects, and then classifying whether two subjects are of the same sex or a different sex. We can see that we get improved performance compared to baselines that are either not accounting for the graph structure or account for the graph structure but do not have this data-driven approach. And then these are the results for a subject classification task. Now, using these estimated similarities that the network has as an output to perform a simple KNN classification and predict whether brain connectivity graph corresponds to a male or female subject. And a different use of the similarity estimates is to use them for manifold learning. So assuming that all these samples lie in a high dimensional space, we use their similarities in this high dimensional space to find a two-dimensional representation that preserves the similarities between the samples. And on the left-hand side, you can see the baseline method and then two different data sets. And the asterisks show the center of mass for each class. And you can qualitatively see how the two classes are better separated with an estimated similarity metric over compared to the baseline. So one problem with the multi-site setup that I briefly touched on before is that although within a single acquisition site we might be able to, from the distances between the connectivity matrices, to say which individuals are within the same class, in this case meaning both healthy individuals or patients with autism spectrum disorder. So you can see that the distances within each class are lower compared to individuals from different classes within a single site. And once we merge all the subjects together and we look at the similar metric, we see that there's no way to, at least by eyeballing, to separate between subjects that are of the same class or different classes. So especially when working with fMRI data and brain connectivity, this becomes a very challenging issue. So what we wondered is whether we could actually make use of this auxiliary information that is very often available along with the imaging data in order to somehow regularize the predictions or you know, augment the predictions that we would get based solely on the imaging data. As well as, so this kind of information can be the acquisition site, or it can be other phenotypic measures like sex or gender, depending on the application. So now we use a graph to represent a population rather than an individual, which was previously the case. And we propose this semi-supervised framework, which models each individual as a node in the graph. And then this each node is associated with a feature vector originating from the imaging data, while the graph structure encodes similarities between the subjects based not only on the imaging data but also on the phenotypic measures that are acquisition site information that accompanies the imaging data. And the goal is, after observing the features on all the nodes, that's why it's called transductive inference, so all the nodes features are present and available during training, but we're optimizing only based on the labels of a subset of them and try to infer the labels for the rest. So this population graph is fed into a graph convolutional network. But now the task and the goal is quite different. So the signal on the nodes is filtered in this graph convolutional layers, and then in the output layer, each node is associated with a feature vector that has the same dimensionality as the number of classes present in the data set. And then this softmax layer is basically yielding the final prediction for each of these unlabeled nodes. As I mentioned before, the population graph's adjacency matrix W is estimated using both the similarity between the feature vectors, here denoted as sigmas, and then mu is used to denote the non-imaging or phenotypic information that is available for all the nodes. And it's basically, this term is indicating the agreement between the non-imaging measures. So there is a lot of design considerations in this problem, like how do we choose the features, how do we choose the graph structure, what combination of the two actually yields the best performance. And we did quite an extensive evaluation to look at a lot of these different things. So on the x-axis here, you can see how the polynomial degree affects performance. And as I mentioned before, the polynomial degree is basically defining the field of view around a specific node that we're looking at. And it can be something that was previously observed in different data sets for a degree of 3 or 4. We can see that we get the best performance. And here the phenotypic graph is a graph that is incorporating this non-imaging information. This is for the ADNI data set, so in this case we've used the sex and age information, and we see that as a polynomial degree increases, there is a larger gap between the meaningful graph and the less meaningful graphs, which can be either a complete graph or a random graph, which is a graph with the same density but randomly reassigning the edges, or a k-nearest neighbor graph that is based on the imaging features. So this is actually telling us that the graph structure matters, and the more accurate that is, and the more accurately it reflects the similarities between individuals, the better the performance boost that we get over a method based just on the imaging features. And another comparison that we looked at is what kind of phenotypic measures can actually be useful in such a task. And again here in the ADNI case, we looked at conversion from mild cognitive impairment to Alzheimer's disease within a number of years. We looked at different combinations of phenotypic measures. We looked at similarities in age, whether sex is the same between the subjects. We looked at the APOE4 allele and whether it's present in the individuals. And we further looked at similarities in terms of the imaging features and longitudinal information for each of the subjects. And then we looked at two different grouping methods, so using different seeds, whether unsampling those or averaging lead to better results. And we saw that the most accurate the graph structure is, which is the case for the top performing ones here, the smaller the difference between averaging and unsampling. And we saw how much of an impact the type of phenotypic measures can have on the final performance. And this is very valuable because it tells us that a fully automated method that would just learn the graph from the imaging features would not be sufficient. This framework allows you to incorporate clinical expertise by saying that there's a lot of literature out there saying that this allele is relevant to Alzheimer's disease, and that age or sex are also relevant. So these are measures that you would want to incorporate in the framework, having the clinical expertise present. And we further compared to different baselines. So in this case, random forest, a rich classifier, which is a linear classifier, and a multilinear perceptron with the same number of parameters as a graph convolutional network. And these are results on the multi-site ABIDE dataset, and this is on ADNI for MCI to AD conversion. And we saw, we observed a significant boost in performance by using this graph structure. So to conclude, we've seen that graph convolutions are providing a powerful framework for several different applications. Here I just talked about metric learning and semi-supervised classification, but there is a lot of other areas where graph convolutional networks can be useful, like for example multi-graph CNNs, where we have an adjacency or a ratings matrix, let's say, in this example it's movies versus users, and there's a graph defined on the movies and a graph defined on the users. And in the imaging case, this could easily be individuals versus brain regions, and then we have a different graph structure for modeling their associations in each case, and we can employ this kind of multi-graph CNN to yield even better performance for issues or problems on brain connectivity graphs. And there's also methods for performing convolutions on directed graphs, which is the case when studying effective connectivity, for example, with EEG or fMRI. And yeah, and then other interesting problems to look at is, first of all, how do we interpret the results, and how do we visualize and say which features are actually most relevant to the problem that we're currently looking at, and this might be which specific brain regions are most important and more relevant, and also methods to learn how to construct the graph from the features and combine the features with the non-imaging information in the best possible way, as well as exploring certain properties of the graph structure, like, for example, how well the communities of the graph align with the class labels and how that affects the overall performance that we observed. I would like to thank my colleagues from Biomedia in this and their help in this research effort, including Ben and my supervisor, Daniel Ruckert. And thank you very much for your attention.